This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll talk with Louisiana's best-known congressman, at least nationally, Vance McAllister. He has been in the news, as we know, and we'll talk with him about his first year on Capitol Hill, the stunning defeat of Eric Cantor in Virginia, and whether or not Congressman McAllister will run again. He said yes, then he said no, and we'll find out if he's had a change of heart. Also, Tom Aswell has been following the travails of Governor Bobby Jindal and what's happened since the session. A lot of gnashing of teeth about Bill number 469, Senate Bill 469. Last week we heard from Robert Adley, the sponsor. We'll hear from Tom Aswell and Dr. Laura Cassidy, the wife of the congressman, and Evelyn Gautreau on the Louisiana Key Academy, Fighting Dyslexia. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Our guest is Vance Michael McAllister, congressman from Louisiana in the 5th Congressional District. He won a special election last year after Rodney Alexander resigned abruptly and pounded Neil Reiser 60-40%, winning by about 18,000 votes in this district. And, of course, Congressman McAllister has been in the news before and since, and there's been much happening in the last week. The pride of Oak Grove, Louisiana, Vance McAllister, who's been fabulously successful in business, began his career as a broadcaster at KWCL, standing tall and proud in the great city of Oak Grove. Good morning, Congressman McAllister.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you so much for extending the offer to come be on your show this morning.
Well, it's good that you accepted. And first of all, what about Eric Cantor? Was that a surprise?
So, surprise is probably not the word for it. It shocked everyone in Washington. Nobody saw it coming. We were at an event for the Cadiana companies at the time when we started hearing the news that it was a possibility, and just no one had it on the radar. I think even Eric's polls had showed him to be totally opposite, with like a 68%, not margin, but base. And, man, I'm telling you, when we got, of course, you know, the news ran crazy all night. And then when we got into the Capitol there Wednesday, it was just total shock and awe, I guess you'd say. That, I mean, you're taking the majority leader, the one that gives the direction to the party, to the floor votes, to everything going on, and all of a sudden he's not going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned more than once when you were running that you'd never even been to Washington prior to being elected to Congress. What's been your perception of life on the Hill since you have been indoctrinated?
Totally not what I thought it was going to be. It's a different world. You know, I come from the business world. I come from when you have a problem, you find a solution and you fix it. Whether you deal with one business partner or a couple of business partners, you always reach out and make the best decision to move ahead with whatever the problem is. Well, Washington is a totally different animal. You can have some of the best ideas in the world, but if it's not the agenda or what's going on now, then it don't matter. You can have real solutions, and it does not matter. Everything is ran so partisanship and so much on what the agenda and powers views are. That's the way it goes. And I've come to realize that, you know, in Congress, there's really only about 10 people that really have power to make a difference in the House side, and that's your leadership and your committee chairmen. And those are the avenues you have to take to convince those people, when it comes to real policy for your district, to try to make a difference. So it's a little bit different, I think, what anybody sees. I'm sure everybody's seen the headlines that I've said. You know, it's dysfunctional, and it is. And I think that's a valuable lesson that everyone should take from my election and from Eric's election, is that the people hold the power. And if you do not stay in touch with the people and represent the people that send you up there, they have the power to remove you, and they will. It ain't just one of these political headlines that politicians say. It's the truth, and I think That's what everybody should take from the whole Eric Cantor election is they'll remove you from the top and they'll remove you from the bottom. Mm-hmm. But the people have the power, and the people will put you there and they will take you out.
Now, you were an unlikely winner, and you won, and you not only won, you won big against the establishment, kind of like Cantor's opponent won the other night. But you got engulfed in a controversy. You said you weren't going to run. My impression, based on your comments today, is that you're rethinking that you might end up being a candidate in the fall.
Well, you know, Jim, it's one of those deals where I made the best decision was for me and my family, and I'll always make the right decision that's for me and my family. And time heals everything. You know, forgiveness is one of the greatest virtues we all hold. But I had a job to do. The people elected me, like you said, overwhelmingly 60-40 to do a job. There was no question in my mind with everything that went on that I was going to do the job. And I had to focus on family, and I'd focus on getting the job done. And that's what I've been doing. You know, this poll that's came out, what's went on with Eric, I mean, there's no secret. The phones have been blowing up with overwhelming support. And we'll see what happens. The job to do is what I got to do today. You know, and there's some point in time that I will have to make the decision that's still best for me and my family. And but there's that part out there that the people put me here, and you know, it might be for the people to take me out. But that's a decision I'm gonna make. I'm gonna have to make this right for me and my family.
How have the media covered you? In your judgment, has it been fair?
You know, I mean, I always take responsibility for my actions. I think, you know, we live in a time today with a 24-hour news source. That's to be expected that one little misstep, one wrongdoing, some people things can get blown out of proportion. My deal is my responsibility for my accountability. Well, I own what I've done. Not proud of it. Work hard to repair any damage I've hurt anyone. And it is what it is. You know, it can be your best asset, and it can be your worst nightmare on either side. So you just have to embrace it, and you have to be who you are, and you have to walk forward. Now, there's been certain parts of the media, you know, that have been completely negative, never have a good thing to say about me, but I do understand that's part of that establishment type propaganda that I did not realize that whenever my victory, because I felt I was doing what was right for the people that I live with in my neighborhood, in my district, in this state that I love. I never realized that beating the establishment candidate, or however you want to look at it, would upset the powerful people the way that it has. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I told you forgiveness is one of the greatest virtues we got, and I've always looked past that, and regardless of who those people were that were against me, once the people put me in this office, it's my job to work with everyone, regardless what side of the aisle we're on, to get stuff done, to make sure the 5th District is better from the day I got here to the day I leave.
Do you think you were set up?
You know, people can make perception about what they think or thought, and I'm sure there was ways it could have been handled better if it had been brought to me, but I did what I did, and I'll own that, and I will take my lumps, my bruises, my bloodshed, and I will keep moving forward and do the job to represent the 5th District the best that I can possibly represent them, because they're the ones that put me here. So I'll never get bogged down in the mud of looking to the past. Because for me, it's all about what the future for the 5th District holds. Right.
Are you considering any legal action against the media or anybody else regarding what happened to you?
You know, I wouldn't say that I'm considering it. I mean, it's always an option there on the table. You know, as long as the truth is the truth, I will take responsibility for it. But, you know, I won't stand back and allow lies to be printed that are just false. So if anything ever comes about like that, then absolutely I'll take legal action. But, you know, for me, it is what I did. I own it. Now, you know, I got a job to do, and that's the job I'm going to do.
Now, you have weathered the storm, and I think the recent poll indicates that if you run, and my guess is that you probably will, you'll have a good chance of winning re-election. It'll be an interesting race, though. I don't think you would deny that. But you've been through the ringer. There's no doubt your family has, and you're a newcomer to Washington. You've gotten pretty much a baptism by fire, haven't you?
Absolutely. You know, and you can only imagine, Jim, the different political consultants that come out of the woodwork and, you know, want to try to ease up to you or talk to you, especially whenever you see poll numbers and all come out and the different advice that they want to give you and all. And it's funny because this world is not set up, or this world in Washington is not set up for a normal guy that comes from the real world, that's held a job, that's lived the American dream. Is set up for politics. I mean, that's why it's called politics. And, you know, I've had the advice that, well, you'll never be able to talk about your family values or your faith again after this. And I disagree with that. Through all this, you're exactly right. I've been baptized by fire. And my faith is my faith. And this, for me, this has made me a better Christian, a stronger Christian. Yeah, I failed. God brought me to my knees. But he showed me that the most important thing to me that my mind and my judgment got away from that I was about to lose was my family. And if you don't learn from your mistakes, no matter how big or how small they are, what kind of man are you? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like through all this, it's made me a stronger man. It's made me a better congressman. And most importantly, it's made me a much better father and husband than I ever thought I needed to work on. So, you know, I look at everything as being, there's a reason, there's a purpose, and I will be who I am. That's who the people elected. I'm still that same person. I still have those same values. I fell short, but I got back up, and I do believe that God's not with the man that gets knocked down six times. He's with the man that gets up seven.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not being a smart aleck by asking this, but has Senator Vitter, who certainly weathered a much deeper storm than yours, has he called or consulted you in any way about how to get through this?
We have talked. He didn't necessarily call to tell me how to get through this and offer any political type advice. Senator Vitter called me as a human and told me that he understood the pain that I was going through, that he's been there. And he offered me support. He offered me prayers. He sent me, you know, several texts through the whole ordeal that he was praying for me, him and his family. And just pure kindness and love, nothing more than that, nothing about, well, this is what you should do, this is how you should handle it. He was just stay strong, remember who you are. We all make mistakes, that kind of language. So he was more of a friend through this scenario than he was someone trying to get political points, and I certainly appreciate him being that way.
Now, the Republican establishment, as I noted, was not really in your corner, and Senator Vitter, of course, embodies the establishment, but he, of course, is an outsider of a different kind. My guess is that there were others in the delegation, the Republican delegation, who didn't give you the time of day after this episode.
You know, believe it or not, it wasn't that way. You know, and even as far as Senator Landrieu had reached out to me and you know, told me that were I was in their thoughts and prayers. All the delegation, Charles, Congressman Bustani, Congressman Cassidy was very warm and just telling me, you know, that he hoped he would never have to go through something what I was facing, and he would never, you know, not be there for you. Even Congressman Fleming had nice things to say to me on the floor.
We'll be back to wrap it up with Congressman Vance McAllister after this 90-second pause on WRK. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757, wherever you are, in a few more minutes with Congressman Vance McAllister, Republican from Swartz, Louisiana, by way of Oak Grove, from God's country in North Louisiana, elected in an unusual fashion, a special election, and pounded the candidate who was favored by the establishment, Neil Reiser, 60% to 40% in a special election. And Vance McAllister got engulfed in an episode with another woman on camera, and he has vouched for the authenticity and said he made a terrible mistake. Your family has stayed with you, and how are they doing?
They're doing great. You know, I'm at home in the district today, and we're fixing to, me and the boys are fixing to go try to find another side-by-side for the farm out here, and we got to go chase down some baseballs for an all-star tournament this weekend. So, you know, that's what real life is. It is a little break away from the chaos in D.C. But, Jim, real fast, I just wanted to give you kudos. I just realized that when we went to commercial break, the song that you introed in the commercial break was Rider of the Storm, and, boy, that was kind of fitting.
Well, you probably played the Doors a time or two when there was spinning records on KWCL. But,
right.
You have been a rider on the storm. I'm sure Jim Morrison would be proud of Vance McAllister. Charles on North Foster. Please be brief, Charles. You're on with Vance.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Congressman. Congressman, let me tell you, I'm a deep blue Democrat, and we have had our Democratic leaders embroiled in some of the same controversy that you've had to deal with. But what I want to tell you this is, Congressman, set aside your feelings and realize it's not just your family that you're representing. There are thousands of families in your district who believed in you, who trusted in you, and, you know, having served in the military, sometimes you have to even look at your own family and say, I have a greater responsibility to more families. And if that's in your heart, if you still believe in them, if you still trust them, Congressman, then you need to do what you've done. Get up and go back to Washington and work with everyone who's trying to help everyday Americans. Because I'm telling you, that's what's missing in Washington. The chaos is all over the world.
All right. Thank you, Charles. Your response?
Yeah, you know, I'd have to agree with Charles. I mean, he's exactly right. And that's whenever they called me about this poll and these numbers and all, and I told him, I said, for me, it's not about the numbers in the poll. The only number I'm worried about is the number of constituents and families that come to me every day and that I can help. That's the job that I've got, and that's the job that I'll do. And I don't care if they got an R or a D behind their name when they come in. When you elected me, you didn't elect me as Mr. Republican to go up there. You elected me as representation of the 5th District. And that's the way I try to view everything. I don't never try to profile anyone as far as what their agenda is. I try to look at it with open eyes and open ears as to what the problem is, and let's find a solution and move forward and see where we can fix it.
And like Charles, Congressman McAllister is a military veteran.
You know, that's one thing, Jim, that I'm probably struggled with more since all this has came out in the past couple of weeks with the VA and all. And I've been down in my district of Alexandria to try to make sure that the problems are being addressed you know, right here in the backyard. But, you know, how can we turn our backs on those who answered the call and not make sure that they are being provided the help when they return from war or when they just get into their elderly years or with whatever disabilities they have? That's just, to me, it's un-American. It's no excuse for it. There shouldn't be a veteran in this country that can't walk into any facility and get treatment when he needs it, if he's willing to go and protect those stars and stripes and give us the ability to have those clinics here in this country.
Tyler on corporate. Hi, Tyler. You're on with Congressman McAllister, who will be our final caller for the congressman today. Tyler?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I just had a quick question. I know that you are against marriage equality, and I just want to know, I assume that you're against it because of the sanctity of marriage with your religious views. I want to know how that kind of holds up to the fact that you cheated on your wife.
All right. You want to respond to that one?
Yeah, you know, that's fine. Like I said, Jim, I always want to. Well, first, let me talk about the equality of marriage. I'm a U.S. congressman. I do not think that's a federal issue. I think that's a state's right issue, and I think it should be viewed by what the majority of the state holds. And in Louisiana, we as a whole, absolutely, we believe in marriage should be between a man and a woman. But I don't think that's the issue that we should be concerned with. Now, as to my part, hey, look, I take responsibility for what I did. But I'm going to tell you this, for anybody to try to politicize it and turn it into this is a gay rights issue or a heterosexual issue, this is not. This is a personal failure issue for Vance McAllister, and I deal with it. And that part is between, you know, my wife and my children and what I'm doing, and I own up to that. And so I don't think that this is all some political issue by what my personal failures have been, you know. It'd be no difference in my choice of vehicle that I drive. Don't mean that no one else should have a choice in the vehicle they want to drive.
On a scale of 0 to 100, zero being I'm not running, I'll never run again, 100 being I'm absolutely in and I want to be a congressman for as long as the people will have me, what's the percentage that you'll run in the fall?
Well, I tell you, Jim, before all the calls and all started coming this week, it was probably a 50-50. I would have to say it's probably tilting more to 55-45 now. But for me, the foremost thing is take care of the district, do the job that's there, and continue to work. And, you know, just like the special election, the campaign didn't start until 90 days before the election. That's a problem with Washington right now, and I think Eric Cantor had proved that was he forgot to tend to his district first and worry about the campaign second. I think we should be working more hours and more days of representing and worry about the campaign whenever qualifying gets here and run your election in your 90 days that it's supposed to be run and then get back to work for the other remainder of your tenure.
Well, Congressman, thank you. Sure appreciate your time and your candor.
I appreciate it.
Take care and good luck to you.
Anytime, Jim. Thanks.
Bye-bye. And in studio now is the man who is the publisher of Louisiana Voice, Tom Aswell. Good morning.
Jim.
Good morning, Tom. You're from an area not far away from the congressman.
Not too far, up around Ruston, Peach Country.
And the congressman, in his speech, he embodies that area of our state.
Yes.
He's a very charming man.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
You know him, don't you?
I had lunch with him in Alexandria. A few months ago, and I found him to be very, very down to earth, very approachable.
Well, you think he's running?
I think he will.
Yeah. You said earlier on this show a few months back that he ought to say, look, I'll resign if Senator Vitter resigns. And today we found out that Senator Vitter has become a personal advisor to him. Well, now you're laughing, but. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, I guess he's the one person you say been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Leave it to Tom, the former stand-up comic, to put it in perspective. Tom Aswell knows an amusing situation when he sees one. This is somewhat like when Bill Clinton got into trouble, as we know with Monica Lewinsky. He brought Reverend Jackson to
Bill
Washington.
Yeah, Bill Clinton. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Bill Clinton and Jesse Jackson talking about marital infidelity. Imagine that.
Yeah, but John Edwards.
But I think this man is running, and I think that he probably has a good chance of winning. And for those of us who thought the only marquee race this year would be the Senate race with Senator Landrieu and Congressman Cassidy and Colonel Maness and Representative Hollis, there are at least two now very fascinating congressional races in Louisiana.
Yep, I think so.
Well, you've been following what's happened since the session. What's the fallout from Senate Bill
469, there's a lot of fallout from that. I think, personally, from my point of view, I think it was a horrible mistake for General to sign that bill, especially with that amendment tacked on that made it retroactive. I think this is going to come back and bite him. It's going to throw the BP procedures into total chaos.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, the
I think there's going to be litigation.
Governor
on that
says
front.
His legal eagles are better than the legal eagles on the other side.
Well, we've seen the track record of the governor's legal eagles. I don't think they've won a case yet.
Now, earlier this week, and Louisiana Voice is Tom's website, and he is a fervent blogger. You said that something you posted was got more response than anything you posted to this point on Louisiana.
Right.
What was that?
Was the fact that the governor's brother is an attorney for a company that represents BP in this matter, and of course the BP lobbyists were swarming all over the legislature during the final days, trying to get this 469 passed. And obviously they had a reason for that. On the surface of it, you'd say, well, 469 doesn't involve BP that extensively, but it did. The fallout is going to be incredible before it's over, I think. I think there's going to be all kind of legal issues addressed on that, lawsuits, litigation, and we'll see.
The governor is running for president.
Sorry, didn't mean to laugh.
You laughed, and now do you think that he's got momentum on his side?
Well, it depends on which way the momentum is sliding. I don't think he does. I don't think he has any momentum. I don't think he has any traction at all in his campaign. Look at the polls. He continues to be the anchor.
But he has, according to critics such as you, Tom, and by the way, he has some critics on the right, too. The governor has managed to inflame a lot of people, right and left, and certainly on the Common Core switch. He is now gotten in deep water with his superintendent of education.
What is it they say? He was for it before he was against it.
Yeah, well, he's managed to inflame some passions in Louisiana. I'm not sure that'll matter on the national scene, but... what is his base?
It's hard to say what his base is. As you said, he's angered people on both sides of the aisle. I think he's going for the Christian base for one thing. I think the Bible Belt. I think he's obviously taking aim at that. As to what else he has, I don't know.
Well, he signed some abortion bills into law yesterday.
Right. Correct.
So you may have it. That may be his base. The Christian right, which is a substantial base.
Well, I listened to Charlie Malonso yesterday on your show, and he made the point that you just don't build a campaign on these issues like that. And he mentioned specifically the Bible.
297-563-3877-217-5757 Inkster Show at WRKF.org for Vance McAllister's successor, Tom Aswell. You're not running, are you?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Bruce and Walden. Hi, Bruce. You're on with Tom.
Yeah, hey, Tom. I'm a loyal reader of The Voice. Love your work. I wonder if you could comment. I mean, my thought about Jindal's base is it's the Koch brothers and Alec and, you know, really big money nationally. And I wonder if you could comment on, you know, the role of outside money in calling the shots in Louisiana.
Well, there's no question that the Koch brothers are part of his base, Alec, and the big money in all these campaigns is just horrendous. As I've written, the 144 sitting legislators between them received $5.1 million from Big Oil, and Jindal received another $1 million himself. That's money that you just cannot compete with. The day-to-day citizen that contributes $25, he can't be heard. There's no way he can walk onto the floor of the legislature and elbow those BP lobbyists to the side and make his voice heard.
Well, the gentleman who defeated Eric Cantor the other night in Virginia won with about $200,000. Congressman Cantor has spent upwards of $8 million. In fact, it was reported on NPR that Congressman Cantor spent more on steak dinners than Professor Bratt did on his campaign. So sometimes money is not
the deciding factor.
Professor
Bratt had money behind him. He may not have spent money personally, but he had a lot of money behind him. The Koch money, the Koch brothers' money, the Tea Party. He had a lot of money behind him, and there some stories have come out on that now. Not many, but
okay.
A few.
Well, next year when we have a governor's race, my guess is that Senator Vitter will overwhelm the opposition in money raised. The only person really out there who could compete with him is Jim Bernhardt because he could write his own check.
Correct.
Will this matter? Now, what do you think?
I think so. I think in any political race these days, money is going to be the dominating factor. I don't think we can avoid that. The days of a campaign run on legitimate issues, I think, are gone.
Today, front page of the Baton Rouge Advocate, Woody Jenkins filed suit to stop the annexation of the hospitals and the Mall of Louisiana into St. George. Woody Jenkins was a lawmaker. He's now in the publishing business. You have a lot in common with him.
Well, he sent me an email a while back disassociating himself from that movement, the St. George movement. So I don't know why he's filing this lawsuit, but I guess he has his reasons.
Well, it is an interesting scenario we have right now in Baton Rouge, though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes. It's going to get more interesting. And again, I think I've said this on your show before, it's all about schools. It's all about education.
All right, 2975633. Kyle says, what's the big deal about the governor's brother representing oil companies? Is that any inherent ethical lapse?
I think it may not be an ethical lapse, but I think the governor owed it to us to at least let us know that. His brother also represents private colleges, and Jindal made a big speech recently promoting private universities and colleges. And his brother represents him as well, and he didn't, you know, he wasn't upfront about that. And I think he should have let us know that. I don't think there's anything illegal about it. I never said there was, but I think it certainly raises eyebrows.
And
for a governor that espouses transparency.
The gold standard for ethics.
Exactly.
That's what he said he was going to give us. He made that announcement on January 14th, 2008. We're now 6.5 years into the Bobby Jindal governorship. How do you rate him?
Not very well. I just don't see anything the man has done that hasn't been politically motivated to promote his career.
Have you voted for him in the past?
I have, twice. In 2003, when Governor Blanco won, and I voted for him again in 2007.
You voted for him when you had the chance to vote for John Georges and Foster Campbell, Walter Boisseau. That was
Foster Campbell? Foster Campbell.
That was 2007.
That's correct. I was thinking Mike Foster. I'm sorry.
No, Foster Campbell.
Right.
And you voted for the governor?
Yes.
And he won with 54% of the vote, and part of that was from Tom Aswell. Now, many people at LSU voted for him as well. Remember Tigers for Jindal?
Mm-hmm.
And whether you like it or not, he has cut funding significantly for higher education.
67%, is it?
Yeah. Now, some people may think that that's money that should have been cut, but I imagine most people on college campuses don't share that viewpoint.
No, I don't think so. I've read a few stories, and one in particular really caught my eye, the movement to take the state out of state universities. And this is part of the private college agenda that Jindal's pushing, as well as his brother.
297-5633 is your number. We'll return and spend a few more minutes with the outspoken Tom Aswell, who has a career in his past as a stand-up comic and as a writer of renown about other topics, including one about Louisiana music. But we'll talk more about politics with him in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, wrapping it up with Tom Aswell of A Louisiana Voice. And coming next, Dr. Laura Cassidy and Evelyn Gautreaux, and they're here to talk primarily about dyslexia and the Louisiana Key Academy. Tom Aswell, glad you made it through the rain, even though you locked your keys in your car this morning.
Locked my keys in my car. My wife's going to have to drive in from Denham Springs to bail me out.
Well, we've got the wife of the congressman in here. How do you see the Senate race as we wrap it up?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Mayor Landrieu's a tough cookie to beat. I can't say that I'm enamored by her commercials with her dad. I think they're a little over the top with corn, but I think it's going to be a close race.
By the way, Nicholas on Nicholson sent an email saying that Moon Landrieu in the commercial, he says Putin. He says the correct Nicholas is of Russian heritage. He says it's Putin, it's not Putin.
He said, okay.
And you're a man I know who follows words rather closely.
Oh, yeah.
Including words said on this show.
That's correct. Alumni. An alumni of LSU.
But, alumni is a plural, right?
That's correct.
But, it should be an alumnus or an alumnae.
That's right.
Right.
May I read something before I leave?
Okay, very quickly.
This is an email that a legislator, and I'm not going to identify him, I'm not going to tell where his district is, but he wrote this to a friend of mine. He said, when a fellow has an oil and gas lobbyist, the lobbyist, and the governor's office all on the same team and wanting you to be on that team, well, it's a challenging last few days of the session. I thought then, and I still hold the belief, that this is a bad bill, that's Senate Bill 469, that this is a bad bill and sets a horrible precedent. Again, this administration has assured another legal challenge to a law it supported, and I expect a lawsuit to be filed before long. That's from a legislator who voted against 469.
All right. Well, thank you, Tom Aswell. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you.
Take care. And hope you get your keys back. And now, moving to the microphone is Dr. Laura Cassidy, along with Evelyn Gautreau, and they're involved with the Louisiana Key Academy and Dyslexia in Baton Rouge. The Key Academy is grades 1 through 3, right?
Yes.
Right. So how prominent is this with young people? There have been some great minds and talents who have had dyslexia. Is it a debilitating issue for some kids, or is it something that is just a blip on the water?
Thank you, Jim. It affects 1 in 5 people, and as you alluded to, some people have very mild dyslexia, so they will do okay in school with help, but you know, a lot of them may not even ever get diagnosed. If you're moderate to severe, it can be extremely difficult, especially to learn to read, can be with speaking, writing, and spelling as well.
You have a child who's dyslexic, right?
Yes, I do.
And has it been a challenge?
Yes. She has severe dyslexia. And, of course, as it would any parent, it breaks your heart. But we have been able to find resources for our child. And I'm pleased to say she continues to make strides, very positive strides. And the school was born out of that for other kids to give them that opportunity.
You're hearing the voice of Dr. Laura Cassidy, and we also have Evelyn Gautreau, who is a person in charge at the Louisiana Key Academy, which is located right by Catholic High on Government Street next to the Piccadilly. Kind of an unusual place for a school, but you've been there, what, about a year, right?
Just about, yes, sir.
How did you get involved?
Well, I met with Dr. Cassidy and Suzanne Petty when they were writing the charter. So I knew some information about it. And then when I found out there was an opening for a principal, I applied.
So you applied and you got the job. And
yes.
How many children are in the school?
We had 130 this past year. And our max will be 184 this year.
And we have vacancies.
Yes, we do. We have a few left under 10 in third grade and a few left in second grade and about 1 or 2 spaces left in first.
So it's something that people have responded to, and you say that 1 out of 5 kids has some form of dyslexia.
Correct. And we know from the functional MRIs where the deficit is, where the brain problem is. And of course, we're going to learn a lot more over the next decade. So, but the manifestations of whether it's moderate or severe, we can't tell that unless we interact with the child.
When do you have telltale signs? What, are there any indications that a child is dyslexic?
Oh, I love that question. It does it does run in families. We want so much to help identify these children when they're early. I think it terrifies parents, but it would be difficulty learning the alphabet. The child knows the alphabet, and the next day, they don't remember a thing because they can't put sound to the written alphabet. And so it's perplexing. They can't rhyme words because rhyming, you have to hear that difference, and that's difficult for them. And then as they get older, they're smart kids. You know they're smart, but they can't learn to read.
Now, you say, Dr. Laura Cassidy, there's some mild manifestations of this, and then there's some that are extreme. What's the difference?
Are you talking about, well, it would be just more difficulty learning to read, more difficulty in spelling. Now, as far as an anatomical reason, we're still learning more, but it's just that they have difficulty learning and remembering a word. So for us, reading becomes automatic, and you don't even realize how difficult it could be to see the word cat and go cat, cat. We do it instantaneously. For these children, it is so difficult, takes so much energy. It is just a very difficult process.
And Evelyn, I would imagine the instructors at the school have to have some kind of specialized training to deal with these
challenges. Well, all of our teachers and interventionists are certified and highly qualified. Once they come to us, we train them in our curriculum, which is a multisensory Orton-Gillingham-based curriculum called Basic Language Skills.
How can parents help?
Oh, call us. We'll work with you.
When the child goes home, you've had training that is available at the Louisiana Key Academy and maybe other places, but what do parents do when the kids get home to address this?
That's a great question. And one of the things, because I went through this with my child, is the biggest thing for us to impart to parents is this is a real entity. They're not lazy. They're not stupid. Because you can imagine if the parent doesn't understand it, they're like, well, Johnny, you knew this yesterday. You're just lazy. So it's helping them more than anything understand this is real. And then it's not so much that they have to get involved in the early stages with the delivery of the education, but to help them to reinforce the self-esteem to these children.
Okay. Well, is there any other school? This is a question from Caesar. Is there any other school in the city that is addressing dyslexic children?
We are a free public charter. There is another private school that addresses dyslexia, but we're the only public charter.
Okay, a question from Paula to you, Dr. Laura Cassidy. What about vaccinations? There have been correlations that have been contended, not proved, but contended regarding vaccinations and autism. What about vaccinations and dyslexia?
No association.
None at all. None. But you say it is heredity plays a factor.
Absolutely.
How often?
That's not entirely known, and I would be remiss to even, I would be guessing at that. But we know, so one way, actually, an adult will say, go through this with their child, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, I was never identified, and now there's so much more awareness. Mm-hmm. It's through the child that they are identified.
Now, you have other children. How can other children help with a dyslexic sibling?
It's all just an understanding. Again, these kids can be, their self-esteem can be battered if the education system doesn't understand what it is. And so it's helping the siblings, the parents, understand, bring out their strengths, because we all have strengths. Their strength is not going to be reading fast, but their critical thinking is good. Their imagination is great. So you play to their strengths.
Well, before you got involved in this and other matters of importance, you were a noted surgeon, breast cancer surgeon, considered to be one of the tops in the United States right here in Baton Rouge. That's an issue that you're synonymous with. Do you think that in your former field that there are advances that are quite significant?
Well, for breast cancer, I think in the last decade and a half, we've seen tremendous advances in the treatment of breast cancer, and one has been awareness. So for me, dyslexia translates to that awareness and giving the power to the parent, just like in breast cancer, trying to give the education and power to the patient. But I'm thankful that most patients with breast cancer do not die from breast cancer, can often have less surgery, and live a lifetime of good quality.
Was it difficult to give up your practice?
Yes.
Why did you do it?
Well, it's many reasons, but part of the reason is because I have pretty significant arthritis in my neck, because as you examine and as you do surgery, you know, you're usually looking down.
Really?
So
I didn't even think of that.
It's common among surgeons.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And you're a young person.
You're a generous person.
No, I'm about my age, and I consider myself young, so that's unfortunate, because I know you were very good. You wrote actually an essay last year after the surgery by Angelina Jolie. What did you think of the choice she made?
I applaud women that do brave things, that is very personal, and she's obviously a public figure, but I feel like she was sharing her experience and encouraging other women and giving them, again, some knowledge. And in this day and age, you hear a lot of things from a lot of people. Some of it's correct, some of it's not. But again, I've tried to translate what I learned as a physician with breast cancer into this with dyslexia. And I'll just tell you that dyslexia is so difficult to understand. It was difficult for me to understand what was going on in the brain, translate what was going on to my child's life. And that really was the impetus for Suzanne and I to push for the school and to help parents understand. You know your child. Your child is average or above, and they can't read. It's just terrible that they would be told your child's never going to learn to read, or that we have children that go through school and they can't read. So I took the passion from the medical field and am trying to help bring that medical knowledge into the classroom, and lucky to have Evelyn and wonderful teachers to deliver that education.
All right. A question for the Louisiana Key Academy, if a parent or an interested party wants to contact you, how do they do it?
You can call us at 225-298-1223, and we will do everything that we can to help you get you in.
And Dr. Laura Cassidy, if your husband wins the Senate race, will you be spending more time in Washington?
I don't know. I like Louisiana better than I like Washington. So I
really?
Yes.
Well, you your husband still practices medicine, right?
Correct.
And we're not going to talk much about politics, because that's not why Dr. Laura was invited here. But you are sending out emails now that some of us are getting, and the most recent one from Dr. Laura says, in a sign of extreme desperation, Harry Reid's PAC is falsely trying to tie bill to Obamacare.
Yes, that email went out, I guess, yesterday or today. Again, we're both doctors. Again, being a doctor led me for this passion for dyslexia. But I also believe in telling the truth, and the truth is that my husband believes, as well as I do, that the reason that medicine is successful is when the relationship is between the doctor and the patient. The patient is who we serve and take care of.
Do you and your husband ever disagree on things?
All the time. All the time.
On political matters?
Absolutely. I'm an argumentative person, Jim. I'm a surgeon. But you know, he still loves me. He's still married to me. And he shows you that he believes in strong women.
But if he votes one way and comes home and has to face you, what happens?
I haven't, we both have our opinions, but that's a good thing.
Well, he is a guy who got in politics in his mid-40s and has been fabulously successful, has not lost a race, and has taken down some pretty big names. He's going for the gold here. This isn't just Joe Blow he's running against.
No, it's a big race, and you know, he's busy with that, and I'm thankful that I'm busy with the school and can focus on any way I can help to get the word out about the school. And again, we have a couple of openings left, and so if you're interested, please do call us.
Yes.
Or we have a website.
Yes, LouisianaKeyAcademy.com.
Louisiana Key Academy.
Louisiana spelled out, right?
Yes.
KeyAcademy.com. Well, thank you, Dr. Laura Cassidy. Thank you, Evelyn Gautreaux. Good luck with the Louisiana Key Academy, grades 1 through 3.
Yes.
And it's located in Mid-City, and you can find out more about what they're doing for dyslexic children by going to LouisianaKeyAcademy.com. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week, and until then, thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.